Couch Potatoes across the country, around the world, on the radio and on the internet. I'm Kevin Carr, and you're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies. On today's show, I'm going to be talking about the new films Barbarian, Pinocchio, Clerks 3, Cars on the Road, and Central Park Season 3. I'm also going to be talking about some news, the Trailer Park, and the Home Cinema Roundup featuring Star Trek The Motion Picture, the Director's Edition. But first, if you want to get in touch with me, you can email me at fatguys@fatguysatthemovies.com. You can leave me a voicemail at 740-205-6456. That's 740-205-6456. You can find me on the internet at fatguysatthemovies.com or facebook.com/fatguysatthemovies. And if you want to reach out to me on Twitter, I'm at twitter.com/KevinCarr.
Good evening. I'm Ron Burgundy, and this is what's happening in your world tonight.
The news that's really kind of bubbling up this week that just kept going throughout the week was more of this nonsense about the Don't Worry, Darling premiere that was at Venice. You would have expected all of this gossipy stuff and the drama to unfold and then have the premiere and kind of be done with it, because it seemed that they were pumping this drama to help get some interest in the movie. But I think that this is just drama that's spilling out, which, look, I kind of blame Olivia Wilde on this, because she set the tone on the set, and clearly there were conflicts between Florence Pugh and Shia LaBeouf, and then Harry Styles is involved, and Chris Pine's acting weird, and I mean, whoever is the director sets the mood. And yes, you have big personalities involved in movies, and those personalities, especially the actors, can overtake things. But the director sets the mood. But what ended up happening is throughout this premiere, things even just got weirder. I mean, you had Chris Pine showing up at the press conference, and he looked like he was going into a trance. I mean, seriously, looked like he was astral projecting. He just zoning out during these press conferences. Florence Pugh did not go to the press conference. Now, of course, the word was, well, because she's so busy shooting Dune. And I kind of call BS on that, because the role she has in Dune is not that big. It really is not that big of a role. And unless they're so stringent on their schedule, usually you can make time. And I know the women have it harder, because I've gone to press conferences and red carpets, and guys just have to wear a suit. Women dress to the nines. And then when you saw her on the red carpet, I mean, you're like, okay, I can see where that crazy outfit she was wearing took time to put together, but couldn't have been there 2 hours earlier for the press conference. That's all weird on its own. You've got Spitgate. Did you hear about this? This is insane. Somebody had a shot of Harry Styles sitting next to Chris Pine at the premiere, and it looks like he spit on him. Now, apparently it was an optical illusion. And I really don't think that he spit on him in the middle of sitting down for this movie. But that's the kind of thing that's so weird about it, is you couldn't believe that was going on with all the drama that was unfolding. And then on top of it, at the end, you've got after the premiere, which they have been rough reviews. I mean, Florence Pugh has been heralded on this movie, but the reviews itself for Don't Worry, Darling have been really, really rough, essentially saying that it's not very subtle with the message it's trying to do. And it's clear that Olivia Wilde thought she was putting something brilliant together, and it really is very surface. But then she doubles down afterwards, and she doubles down on this I fired Shia LaBeouf narrative. This is just turning into a train wreck, and the punchline is going to be when this movie comes out. They have done nothing good for the movie whatsoever with the crazy drama unfolding. So we'll see if that ends, but you know, the movie comes out in theaters in like a couple weeks. Now, the things that's interesting about the box office last weekend, because you had that $3 cinema day, and the $3 cinema day did really, really well. It like brought like 8.1 million people to the theaters, I think, on just Saturday, which, of course, yeah, lower your prices to $3 a ticket. You're going to get a lot of people showing up. That was enough in the way they had the older movies showing up and the expansions of some. Top Gun came in at number one with $6 million. It ended up crossing $700 million. Which tops out Black Panther. It's like the top fifth highest grossing movie of all time. Spider-Man No Way Home came in like third. It was originally clocked in at number one, but it came in third behind Bullet Train. The Invitation tumbled down to fifth place with $4.9 million. And Jaws IMAX / 3D, that came in nine. Almost 50 years after it had come out, it came in at number nine with $2.6 million, and of course it was a remastered version of it. And then Honk for Jesus, Save Your Soul, debuted at number 14 with $1.4 million. Now, you got to remember, that was a hybrid release. That was also available on Peacock. And this is one of those things. It was a remnant of film festivals that had got a lot of interest. It got a lot of buzz. And everyone's like, oh, we need this movie. And then when it finally releases, you know, it's not that big of a movie. But, I mean, I don't know how much it got watched on Peacock. Because you had movies like Firestarter, which I think flopped both in theaters and on Peacock. But something like that Marry Me movie with Owen Wilson and Jennifer Lopez actually did quite good on Peacock. It had a lot of viewers. It just didn't make the dollars in the box office, and I don't know whether it would have. This is the kind of things that they're trying to do to justify having their streaming service, because like I said, they're billing hundreds of millions of dollars a month. Listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. That sound means it's time to roll into the trailer park. The first one I want to talk about is Glass Onion, a Knives Out mystery, which comes to Netflix later this year. It does not have an actual release date, but it's going to be coming sometime in the holiday season.
Ladies and gentlemen,
this is it.
You expect it? The mystery.
Get your hand off of that.
You expected a puzzle. But for one person on this island, this is not a game.
Will you explain it to us then, Detective?
The character that Daniel Craig played in Knives Out is the main connection to this one. They're basically trying to make him like a Hercule Poirot type character that Rian Johnson created. And as I understand it, Netflix doesn't just have the rights to make this movie. I think they want to make a whole slew of, I think he's like a Cajun French character. And so they want to make this a whole series, which, you know, hey, you know, knock yourself out. Get Daniel Craig. You know, he likes to torpedo his own series. You look how long it took him to, you know, complain every time he did a James Bond movie. He's going to be complaining about another Glass Onion movie. I love seeing a Agatha Christie style murder mystery coming out every couple months. Or every year or so, that would be great. Will they be able to deliver as high of a, you know, caliber with the director and this big of a cast? Or is Rian Johnson going to just turn around and try and ruin another franchise like he did Star Wars? Anyways, this one looks interesting. I don't know too much about it. I don't want to know too much about it, but it's got a really good cast. And, I think this one is going to have my interest this holiday season. The next one I want to hit really quickly is Spirit Halloween. I didn't even realize they were doing this, but apparently they made a movie based on the Spirit Halloween store. It comes out on VOD on October 11th.
We can always just watch a scary movie at my place.
Dude, we need something super creepy or I'm out.
You want something really creepy? How about a night locked in here?
Pop-up Halloween store in a creepy lot? Awesome.
Booyah!
We're doing something Saturday. Three of us. Best holiday of the year, just like always.
But the store closed and we're still inside.
You mean the store's locked and we're trapped inside?
Oh my God, what's happening?
1 hour on the anniversary of their death, they can possess things
or people.
This looks a lot like a lower rent version of Scary Stories to Tell in the Dark, which I'm all for, just sort of the fun, almost TV movie element to a horror film that is squarely based on Halloween. And obviously it's a marketing ploy, and it's to get interest in the pop-up Halloween store, Spirit Halloween, which is, you know, these things pop up all around this time of year. And now it's just showing up, not even in theaters, it's going to be on VOD. But you know what, this could be fun. This has a made for TV feel to it, but hey, I still kind of am into it. I kind of want to see it. It really actually has my interest. So we'll see if I can get a chance to check that out on VOD for when it comes out next month. Coming up next on Fat Guys at the Movies, I'm going to be talking about the Disney Plus Day releases of Pinocchio and Cars on the Road. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's jump into Disney Plus Day. And what's funny is Paramount Plus was doing Star Trek Day on the same day, which I don't know why they chose that as Star Trek Day. First Contact Day, I think, is back in April, but that's just the nerdy Trekkie in me. But anyways, first one, probably the big one that they're pushing the most, is Pinocchio, the live action or CGI version of Pinocchio. Robert Zemeckis directs this live-action CGI version of the 1940 beloved animated film about a puppet who wishes he could be a real boy.
Hello, Pops.
Ah! Jumping jeepers.
An almost real boy. Turn around, let me get a look at you. I will be right here when you get back.
Pinocchio is running around loose without a conscience. Can you imagine the trouble he's gonna get into?
Wouldn't want that on my conscience.
Everybody who's anybody wants to be a somebody.
But I want to be real.
Why on earth would you want to be real when you can be famous?
Okay, they've been doing these live action slash CGI remakes for several years now, going all the way back to when I think they were doing stuff like Cinderella. And, you know, they did the Maleficent movies, which are a take on Sleeping Beauty. So they have the classics in there, but they've also done remakes of stuff like The Lion King and Aladdin. And I say more recent, but I'm dating myself at this point. These aren't that recent. They're 30-something, 40 years ago. And then, like, they did the Beauty and the Beast remake. They did Dumbo, which was done by Tim Burton, which I think really strayed a lot. But, you know, they've had good and bad returns. I thought some were quite good. I thought some were not so good. And I sometimes agreed with the popularity of them as well. But this one, it's got Robert Zemeckis behind it. And he's well known for loving the sort of the technology behind things, really getting into the artistry of the CGI world, which sometimes leaves it a little bit cold. And you also bring in Tom Hanks playing Geppetto, and Geppetto's not a big character. And in this movie, I don't think they expand him into it. It's not like the Polar Express, where he shows up throughout the whole movie. This one, it's just the Geppetto scenes that he's in there. But I gotta say, I thought this was actually a relatively authentic version of Pinocchio. I thought it was a decent adaptation to it. Reminded me a lot of how I felt about The Lion King when they did that. I know a lot of people complained about that because they thought it was unnecessary. And yeah, these are all unnecessary, you know. But I thought The Lion King was a good version of it. And I thought this was a good version of Pinocchio. You know, it's got some additional things. There's elements to it that are not exactly a one-to-one comparison from the original 1940 film. But I think, and I've not read the original book, but I feel that those came from that they were leaning more into the source material to sort of pad out the movie. Although the movie's only about as long as Pinocchio, that's one of the things I think that it was better than, say, like Beauty and the Beast. Beauty and the Beast was like a half hour longer than the animated movie, and it just dragged at a certain point. This thing's about the same length. The other thing I'm seeing, which people complaining about, is one of the critical things, because the critics are kind of raking this one over the coals. One of the things I see people complaining about is saying, oh, it's creepy and weird and warped and twisted. I'm like, have you watched the original Pinocchio? That thing's full of nightmare fuel. I mean, you've got giant sea monsters eating people. You've got kids turning into donkeys. I mean, the whole Pleasure Island sequence, in which, by the way, they use the term Pleasure Island, which I'm surprised they did. I mean, giving the Jeffrey Epstein negative connotation to that term now, but they still use that. That whole sequence is an absolute carnival of crazy, but it works. And they lean into the weirdness and the creepiness and how devastatingly terrifying this would be from a child's point of view. And that's what it was like watching Pinocchio when I was a little kid. Pinocchio was a horror movie. It's sort of like that sequence in Dumbo. Like, Dumbo's the same way. Dumbo is a beautiful, sweet, charming movie until you get to the clowns, and then until you get to that Pink Elephants on Parade song, and it doesn't pull its punches on the weird and disturbing elements. And that's the part I love the most about it. So I'm going to have to say that Pinocchio rocks.
It rocks.
Excellent!
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's talk about Cars on the Road. This is a micro-series or a mini-series there. I think there's something like 8 or 9 episodes, and they're like 8 to 10 minutes long each. So they're the basic length of an after-school cartoon, you know, like a Tom and Jerry thing. And it tells a story. So you've got about, I would say, about 90 minutes worth of content. So you kind of have a movie's worth of shorts, but there are a whole bunch of short films. Anyways, Lightning McQueen agrees to go on a cross-country road trip for a wedding of his best friend Mater's sister.
Hey, buddy, just letting you know I'm going to be gone because I'm heading back east to go to my sister's wedding.
Wait a minute. You have a sister?
Whoa!
Boggles the mind, man.
It must be ages since you've seen her.
What if I go with you?
Really?
Let's make it a road trip.
There's thousands of things to see.
I'm guessing this is the beginning of something great.
You got that right. We'll wander the back roads.
This is so cool.
I enjoyed these. I thought they were cute. One of the things in the structure of them is they're short. They've done this before. They did it with Scrat Tales, with the Ice Age characters, and they did this with Olaf, only the Olaf things were really, really short. These are essentially 10-minute cartoons, which are what the old one-reel cartoons used to be. And I thought these were fun. Now, you don't get the in-depth character element you get in a normal two-hour Pixar film. They do some really rich character elements and character stuff. You don't get that even in the Cars movies. Now, I mean, arguably Cars 2 was less nuanced from a character perspective, but the original Cars and Cars 3 really do take time to work through character moments and elements of a story and elements of a plot. And those are kind of, and sometimes very beautifully constructed. And that's one of the things Pixar does. You don't get that because they're 10-minute shorts. You know, they're gags. And if you're looking for the depth and emotional elements you get from a Pixar movie, you're not necessarily going to get these because, like I said, there's a bunch of short films, but they're cute car movies. If you like Mater, I know that's the character of Mater because Larry the Cable Guy does a voice for him. Larry the Cable Guy annoys a lot of critics, and so they usually lean into critical elements of Mater's character. But these are cute. These are fun little throwaway things, you know? I mean, the Cars movies, what's funny is, you know, for as much as people complain about stuff going to Disney Plus, because I know there's a lot of people who say, like Pinocchio, say that should go to the theaters, you know, because theaters are struggling. But Disney is beefing up their service because, you know, stuff like the Cars movies, especially the original Cars was not the highest grossing Pixar movie by a mile. It was not, but it wasn't until I went into a department store with my kids and I saw all the merchandise just in the clothing and like bedding aisle. And then I sat there and I thought, oh, Cars is probably making more money for the studio than any of the other Pixar properties because of the merchandising levels. And they got to keep that merchandising up. So, of course, they're putting out some new Cars content. And it's cute. I mean, it's not transcendent. You know, it's not terribly deep or poignant. But these are one shots that are cute and entertaining. I enjoyed them. They're a nice little lark, and that's all they're meant to be. So I'm going to say that Cars on the Road kind of rocks.
It kind of rocks.
Coming up next on Fat Guys at the Movies, I'm going to be talking about Barbarian and Clerks 3. And welcome back to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Now let's talk about the R-rated stuff. Let's talk about the stuff that you should not watch with kids. And let's kick things off with Barbarian.
I'm renting this place.
No, I booked it a month ago.
Why don't you come inside and we'll call these idiots. It's dry and there's a lock on the door. You take the bedroom and I'll sleep out here on the couch.
This process might seem overwhelming, but with a little practice, it can soon become a pleasurable experience.
A woman on a business trip to Detroit is accidentally double booked in a home rental, only to discover something terrifying about the house. Barbarian's a horror movie. It's an R-rated horror movie. If you're not into horror movies, if you don't like scary films, if you don't like gore or violence or creepiness or dark corners or jump scares, do not go see this movie. Now, here's the thing. I'm a huge horror movie fan. And right now, it's you know, we're heading into the fall, you know, even though October's still several weeks away, I'm already starting to watch my horror movies. I got Halloween decorations coming up soon. So this is the time to lean into horror films, and I'm a big fan. So this is made for me. I really enjoyed Barbarian, mainly because it was unexpected. I don't want to give you any more details about the movie than what I just did in that blurb before I played the trailer. And the reason is, this is the kind of film, and a lot of movies are like this, but this one is especially like this. This is best experienced with the least amount of knowledge of the movie. So go in as ignorant as you can, because it's creepy and it's weird and it's off-putting. And it's not that there's anything in this movie that I haven't seen. I literally can pluck out elements from this movie and say, oh, I saw this in this film. I saw this. It's familiar, but it's constructed in such a way that it's unique. They throw these things at you and it's disorienting. That's what makes this movie work, is it's jarring at times, but it works because of that. And the character motivations seem to shift. And that's, I mean, it's, I'm talking extremely vaguely because, like I said, I don't want to give anything away, but this is a very well done film and bizarre. And there's elements to it that, you know, well, I mean, obviously, like any horror movie, you have to have people act stupid. You know, this goes beyond just like, oh, let me investigate this sound in the backyard. I don't realize I'm in a horror movie. The character doesn't. But there's parts of this that you're like, why are you doing that? I mean, there's so many points where the characters could have turned away and gone, nope, I'm not going to deal with this. But they don't. And there's a curiosity there that you share with the characters that drags them in there. And sometimes it's curiosity. Sometimes it's just plain ignorance or stupidity. But that's part of the entertaining elements of this film. But it is grisly. It is disturbing. It is at times surprisingly violent. It's an effective film. And I enjoyed it. I mean, this is a disturbing and off-the-wall thriller. And it keeps you guessing and it keeps things fresh, which is quite a feat to do in today's horror landscape. I'm going to have to say that Barbarian totally rocks.
It rocks.
Excellent!
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's talk about Clerks 3. Dante and Randall now own the Quick Stop convenience store, and when Randall suffers a heart attack, he decides to do something productive by making a film about his job.
Mr. Dante!
I need an ambulance at the Quick Stop!
Saved my life, man. Wish I had a life worth saving.
What are you talking about?
Sit around and watch the same movies over and over.
I always thought you could have made a cool movie.
You're right. I'm living on borrowed time. No more watching movies.
I'm gonna make a movie!
What's the movie gonna be about?
It's about him working here.
Meta.
Everything in the script is something either me or someone I know said.
I'm not even supposed to be here today!
I have gone up and down with my fandom of Kevin Smith. Back in the mid-90s when I first discovered him, I thought his stuff was a lot of fun. And it was kind of brilliant stuff for somebody in your 20s. You know, I mean, it was DNF jokes. There was this way he put stuff out there and a philosophical element to his films that I thought were quite good. And I really liked Clerks. I thought Mallrats was okay. I'd never liked Chasing Amy. I thought it was at times, I don't know if offensive is the right word, but dismissive and crass about the LGBT community. And it was weirdly ahead of its time in being insulting to that community, because it was seen as a good movie. And now you look at it, it just doesn't hold up. And I liked his Jane Silent Bob stuff, But at a certain point, when you got to be 40, you think, okay, leave that stuff behind. Okay, do something more significant. I always wanted to see him do something bigger and better. And he tried it with Jersey Girl, and he got pulled back into the same kind of jokes there. He did the same thing. He tried to do Cop Out, which at least was something different, but it was a crappy movie. And so then when he made Clerks 3, I'm like, oh my God, is this going to be any good? And I got a chance to see it. And I have to say, I was kind of surprised. I mean, there's a heart to this movie. You don't really see it in the trailer. Don't get me wrong. They play the trailer like a standard Kevin Smith film, where it's getting the crass jokes and the absurd characters and the overtop performances. But there's a real heart and soul to Clerks 3 that you don't expect. It kind of takes you by surprise. And what's funny about it is it's partly autobiographical because, you know, Kevin Smith worked in the Quick Stop and working there gave him all these ideas to make the movie Clerks. At the same time, he also had a heart attack several years ago and decided to change his life around, at least, you know, health-wise. Those things were like 25 years removed from each other. So it wasn't the heart attack that made him become a filmmaker. So he kind of merges those elements to his life. And if you know enough about the making of Clerks, you see a lot of familiar stories showing up. Like, you know, things like, for example, there's a scene where Jay of Jay and Silent Bob is supposed to dance outside of the Quick Stop. And quite literally, Jason Mewes didn't want to do it with anyone watching, so they had to just set up the camera and run and hide in the Quick Stop while he danced. And they play that. And so if you know enough of the stories of the behind the scenes and the characters and the things that they're doing, it's familiar, but there is an introspective nature to this movie. There's a way of Kevin Smith reflecting on not just his life, but the life of what the characters, what his life could be, and that make them the story kind of interesting. And yeah, I mean, there's a lot of callbacks to the original Clerks movies and even Clerks 2. And you do bring some of these characters back again and again. But that kind of works. And like I said, I was really surprised with this one. Now, what's interesting about this one, it's only playing in theaters like from the 13th, which is Tuesday, through the next week, like the 18th. It's an exclusive, like, one-week run, and I'm covering it this week. You can't go see it yet. You got to wait till Tuesday, but I wanted to cover it this week to kind of lead into that. I think he was originally going to four-wall it, and he's doing, like, the Fathom event stuff with it, which is giving it a wider release, and Lionsgate's giving it a week-long release. So theaters is the only way you're going to see it, but it's going to show up on VOD pretty soon after that. But yeah, I mean, it's what Kevin Smith should have been doing in terms of introspective filmmaking, going back to when he did Jersey Girl. But he didn't have the critical stamina to do it back then. And so it's nice to actually see some growth for Kevin Smith. It took him a couple decades. Now, please, go do something outside of the Clerks of U.S. Universe. Grow as a filmmaker and as a writer. Don't keep retreading these Jane Silent Bob characters that are fun for the fans. Don't be that band that always just plays their hits. Try and do something different. Be David Bowie and not a Duran Duran tribute band. So, I'm going to have to say, you know, this is more than your standard gutter play seen in too many of Kevin Smith's recent films, but the movie has a surprisingly heartfelt and sensitive story to tell. I'm going to say that it rocks. God help me, I was surprised, but it rocks.
It rocks.
Excellent!
Coming up next on Fat Guys at the Movies, I'm going to be talking about Central Park Season 3 and the Home Cinema Roundup featuring Star Trek The Motion Picture, the Director's Edition, available on disc. And welcome back to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's finish up the show by talking about Central Park Season 3. This is on Apple TV Plus. More shenanigans from the family living in Central Park as they try to keep the park safe, educational, and free for all New Yorkers.
Is this them? Of course it's them!
The intrepid ranger who lives in a castle in the park with his indie journalist wife and their two kids.
I got a big plan. More people see the park and all of its beauty,
the more they'll want to come. It might even get the attention of the interim mayor.
You're here!
I'm here!
I did it. I'm an actress living in the Big Apple.
What part are you auditioning for?
Customer number 2!
Look at it. That stupid park doesn't even know what's coming.
How would a park know what?
Shush! I'm plotting.
I watched the first 2 seasons of Central Park. I thought that was one of those little gems that showed up on Apple TV Plus. What's so funny is Apple TV Plus is kind of the forgotten streaming service. Everybody talks Netflix and Hulu, and even Disney Plus has really got a footprint. But Apple TV Plus has some great stuff on there. And they have big series and stuff. You know, of course, obviously Ted Lasso is an Apple TV Plus series. And Severance, which is up for Emmys this weekend, is an Apple TV Plus series. Central Park is a lot of fun. It's done by the people who do Bob's Burgers. So it has that level of animation. It's a bit of a musical, though, because you've got Josh Gad as this narrator that sort of frames the story around this family living in Central Park. I mean, when they say they live in Central Park, they're not homeless people. That's their job. The father is the caretaker for it. One of the things they've also done with this one is they've aged the kids. They've got these 2 kids, and they were little kids in the first season, and they've kind of grown up a little bit, especially the daughter, which is kind of, she's falling into, you know, kind of the middle school age. So she's not as caricature as you get with, like, the kids aren't the caricatures that they have in Bob's Burgers. You don't have the Jean and Louise and Tina bizarre characters that embody these extreme traits. The son, played by, I say Titus Andromedon, but it's Titus Burgess. I say Titus Andromedon because that's the character he played in the Unbreakable Kimmy Schmidt. His character's a little more extreme. His character's a little more bizarre, whereas the girl, who was originally played by Kristen Bell and is now played by David Diggs' girlfriend, which I think is a stupid recasting. I mean, fine, pick somebody who's a person of color, but don't pick somebody who's banging somebody on your show. That just lowers the quality of it. I've never been a big fan of when you have a series or a TV or a movie, you know, it goes back to the Don't Worry Darling stuff, where it's like, oh, we're going to recast and it's going to be with somebody who's banging the director. I always find that crass, you know, and especially this one where they had a recast for racial reasons. But they bring Kristen Bell in as the aunt in this one. So they've brought her back into the series, which I think is great. And she's a white girl in this one, so she's not dealing with any sort of awkward mixed race type stuff. But these are fun. They lean more into the musical parts of it because it is kind of a partially musical episode. That's kind of part of the setup of Central Park. Now, the first 3 episodes are available now on Apple TV Plus, and they're going to be releasing a new episode every week as we go forward for the next, whatever, like 8 or 9 weeks. It's a cool little show. I think it's fun. It's cute. And, you know, they are developing the characters and taking them into different elements. It's more whimsical fun that takes the characters on new journeys from previous seasons. So if you like the previous episodes of Central Park, you're going to enjoy this one. It does more of the same. And of course, I'd say the best parts are Stanley Tucci is a crazy old broad who's trying to take over Central Park, and she's the villain of the show. It's more of the same, and it's a lot of fun, and I enjoy it. So I'm going to have to say Central Park Season 3 totally rocks.
It rocks.
Excellent!
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. That song means it's time to roll into the home cinema roundup. This week's spotlight is on Star Trek The Motion Picture, the Director's Edition, in 4K. This was on Paramount Plus, but now it's being released on 4K disc. So you can watch it at home and you can get the physical copy. The crew of the Enterprise gathers again on a quest to stop a galactic entity from destroying Earth.
Thrust us ahead, Mr. Sulu. Take us out. Mr. Spock, every minute brings that object closer to Earth. I need you.
I am convinced we are inside a living machine.
Shall I go to battle station, sir?
insatiable curiosity.
Spock, you haven't changed a bit. You're just as warm and sociable as ever.
This was the first feature film of the Star Trek series. Now, it was directed by Robert Wise, and one of the things that Wise did, you got to understand what was going on in science fiction at the time. Star Trek ran for 3 years in the late 60s, and then they had the animated series on Saturday mornings. But this was the first time you brought the cast back together in a live-action format. And it was the year after they released Star Wars, and Star Wars became a cultural phenomenon. But Star Trek was always a little more brainy, a little more esoteric. It was less of a pew-pew, shoot-em-up droids and robots running around. There was a whimsy and a cleverness that was in the original series that did not get transferred to this, because one of the things Robert Wise was trying to do is a 2001 version of it, a very heady, cerebral science fiction, which is what Star Trek was known for. And, you know, for a lot of sci-fi fans, especially fans of the written word, were kind of sour on Star Wars because they saw Star Wars as old pulpy sci-fi stuff. It was not seen as esoteric or smart or cerebral. I grew up with Star Wars, so I loved it. And I remember seeing this Star Trek the Motion Picture back in 1978 and not liking it as a kid, you know, because I was a year out of Star Wars. And I was like 6 or 7 when this thing came out. So this was not for little kids. It also stripped a lot of the more whimsical elements out of it. In the trailer, there's a little bit of it, but there was not much. And it just sort of left Bones as being very grumpy. And it left Captain Kirk as being not very interesting. And it left Spock as being very cold. And that works for those characters, but it still wasn't authentically Star Trek. And over the years, I've come back and rewatched this movie a couple times, and recently I rewatched this one because it was available on Paramount Plus. And I have grown to really appreciate what is being done in this movie. It is a 2001 version of Star Trek. It's not quite what Star Trek always was. And then when they did Star Trek II, going forward in The Wrath of Khan, they had a little bit more of the warmth of the Star Trek series. But the director's edition is about the imagery and the special effects and the pageantry and the headiness of what Star Trek meant to be. And this does retread some of the elements from the original series, in particular the old Nomad episode. And there's been multiple episodes on the series where they're facing some galactic threat that a starship is ill-equipped to combat. Even the Galaxy-class Enterprise is woefully ill-equipped to combat this massive galactic event. So they have to use their brains. And that's the draw of this series. That's the draw of this episode. I think it works. I think it's a beautifully done movie. I think it's gorgeous in terms of its scope. It's trying to be Forbidden Planet in 2001. And in some ways it does fail. It does fail spectacularly. But it's also a beautiful science fiction epic in the tradition of these huge movies. It just sometimes falters outside of the Star Trek mythos. I mean, it's still missing that whimsy that made the series fun, but this 2001 version of Star Trek is still fascinating to watch, with the scope worthy of the theatrical experience, and the director's edition in 4K looks gorgeous. It's bigger than what Star Trek was, and that's okay, especially kind of going forward and looking at what it's trying to be. So I'm going to have to say, it still rocks, but it falters as a Star Trek movie.
It rocks.
Excellent!
And that's it for the show. I got to go. Next week I'm going to be talking about Confess Fletch and The Woman King. Until then, have a fat time at the movies or at home.